From the Jackalope Studios high above the city in beautiful Zona Rosa, welcome to Minutes to Memories, reconnecting spirit, mind, and body with your host, Dr. Daryl Drumright.
Well, this is Dr. Daryl Drumright. HarmonyHealthSystems.com is my website. You can get a hold of me at the clinic, 816-436-9355. Tonight, we're going to cover a couple topics. We're going to continue our reading of the Tao Te Ching and Dr. Dale's interpretation of that. So on the Tao Te Ching, the book, we're up to verse number 8, and we're going to cover verse number 8 and probably number 9, and then we'll cover some current events and then go into some stuff that I've discovered about the Native American culture and its resurgence into the forefront, as you're going to see in the coming months and years. I predict a very dominant resurgence into the minds and the thoughts of Americans and people around the world. So verse number 8, it's called The Highest Good. The highest good is like water, nourishing life effortlessly, flowing without prejudice to the lowliest places. In spring, it springs from all who nourish their community with a benevolent heart as deep as an abyss, who are incapable of lies and injustices, who are rooted in the earth, and whose nature rhythms of action play midwife to the highest good of each pregnant moment. Commentary from Dr. Ralph Allen Dale. This verse defines the qualities of those who live in the highest goodness. From an evolutionary point of view, we could differentiate four stages of goodness. Number one, the goodness that was expressed in the communality of tribal times, during which survival depended upon the total cooperation among all members of the tribe. During this first era of human evolution, goodness was the natural expression of both individual and social reality. Badness, which was rare and a social anomaly, was defined as the violation of the tribal goodness norms, taboos, and usually punishable by excommunication from society. How interesting is this is exactly what I'm reading with the Native American cultures, and that's how they punished you. If you dishonored your family, then one of the most severe punishments would be excommunication. They would kick you out of the tribe and set you into the wilderness. That'd be an interesting attempt to do that nowadays. I mean, because nobody else wants you either. So since there's no wild lands anymore, where do you excommunicate somebody to? That's something we'll have to talk about. Number two. The goodness that Confucianism and other religions advocate is an expression of the more altruistic side of our personalities. The assumption is in these advocacies is that goodness requires an effort, a struggle against our supposedly innate tendencies to be selfish and sinful. These badness characteristics came to be dominant during the second era of human evolution that we euphemistically call civilization, during which the competitive economy of survival pitted us against each other. So man starts defining himself and putting himself in the hole, and the only goodness is when you try to claw out of that hole. You don't have natural goodness. Goodness now comes with effort. Number three, the goodness that is expressed in this verse, which implies that while both goodness and badness coexist, that is goodness that flows effortlessly like water, because it is goodness that is more at the core of nature, including human nature. To those of us who function as self-appointed midwives to the transition from the second to the third era, we define our essential selves as good rather than bad. That is, as innately concerned and loving rather than as selfish and ego-centered. We reach for these innate goodnesses as an antidote to our miseducations in badness as we unearth the psychological roots for the rebirthing of our humanity. Wow. I love this guy. I mean, he was writing this stuff before the crash, before the forced recognition of what we've been going through the last couple of years. Number four, the goodness that transcends goodness when the polarization of good and bad will no longer exist. In its stead will be the consciousness and actualization of our inherent and socially educated humanity. It is only this fourth type of goodness that fully expresses the great integrity, and that we may postulate might define our lives in the far future third era of human evolution. I don't like it when he says far future. I believe that at the speed of the internet and the speed of the tools and the communication technologies we have now, that my friends in China, my friends across the North American continent, we can communicate and coordinate within a few minutes and create something in our minds that can become solid on different parts of the planet all simultaneously, thus modifying and accelerating the evolution of the human condition. Verse number 9, over-fulfillment. Keep filling your bowl, and it will spill over. Keep sharpening your knife, and it will blunt. Keep hoarding gold in your house, and you will be robbed. Keep seeking approval, and you will be chained. The great integrity leads to actualization, never over-fulfillment. Just pause. That's good stuff. Commentary from Dr. Dale. Our culture conditions us to keep filling our bowl even after it is full, to keep accumulating more money even after we have enough to meet all our needs, to keep reaching out for more accolades even after we have been fully acknowledged. No other species ever seeks more than it needs. To do so is pathological, symptoms that negates the very fulfillment we crave. If we reject Freud's thesis that human beings are biologically self-destructive, what is the explanation for these self-negating behaviors? When our bowl is the community bowl that we fill and use collectively, we never overfill it. When our knife is the community knife that we sharpen and use together, we never over-sharpen it. When our possessions are community possessions that we gather and use for each other's mutual benefit, we never miserly hoard them. When love is freely expressed, naturally nurturing each member of the community, we never seek it with insatiable desperation. Both in our culture, each of our bowls is our own bowl, but in our culture, each of our bowls is our own bowl, competing with every other for filling. Each of our possessions is our own possession, acquired competitively in the heartless marketplace, because we have sacrificed cooperation for competition. The cash nexus has taken the place of sharing mutual concern and love, generating instead inequities, hostilities, and inhumanities among us. However, ours is that unique evolutionary moment when we can liberate ourselves from all the inequities of the past. One aspect of this liberation is the acquiring of a new great integrity consciousness that rejects the excesses of the past several thousand years. We can now transform our way of life so that we are no longer addicted to overfilling our bowls, oversharpening our knives, overaccumulating possessions, and overextending our demands for attention and love. Celebrate the great integrity as the pathway to actualization in which our self and social components will be mutually supportive and no longer in conflict with each other. This is interesting information because one of the discussions I have with my patriot friends in the New American Movement is the right to own property. Property rights are a deep-seated belief within the Americanism, within the constitutional confines, and I don't completely disagree with that idea that you should have a way of owning your own shelter, a way of protecting your own children, that only you decide who enters and who doesn't enter. I think, and this is still just my beliefs as I'm figuring this all out, that community use of the tools of the trade and the roads and the common areas is important, that everybody have equal access to this. But there seems to be still in my mind a distinction, a separation of home, where I will have my lodge that I can set boundaries and rules within my lodge. And if you're going to come into my lodge, then you have to understand those boundaries and rules. And then I grant you the right to have your lodge, that if I'm going to come on your private property that you are claiming possession to, even though it'll be there after you're dead, while you're in control of it by force or community or however, you should have the right to set parameters and rules for anybody who is living or is on that property. And this is a recommendation that community is more important than any kind of self-possessions. But I don't think it really needs to go that far. I think that there has to be some distinction of self out of community. But the self, to live with honor, has to respect community with its heart and with its love and with your every effort, so that you earn the possessions, you earn the right to have a knife by not over-sharpening the knife. You over-sharpen the knife, you destroy your own property, you don't have a right to another one. You have the ability or the opportunity at first, and then according to your actions, it will unwind or display whether you actually were a steward of it or a consumer of it. I do believe that our current culture is far too much in the consumerism. We devour things instead of cultivate things. We are in dominion over the earth instead of stewardship with the earth. Okay, so we will close that book for now. Todd, are we ready for the first break, or are we done? Okay, let's go ahead and take the first break, and then we'll change the topic. Thank you, everybody. See you soon.
Something like Jackalope 105 FM.
Hey, this is Dr. Drumright again. Happy Friday. Minutes to Memories, harmonyhealthsystems.com is my primary website. Jackaloperadio.com is where we're broadcasting from. Welcome to the show. We're going to jump into a different category today. I wanted to list a couple more acupuncture points for you. I know we covered some master points last time. I'm going to cover some connecting points this time, and there's four of them, and they're paired up that I want to show you where they're at. The first one we're going to cover is called Bladder 62. Excuse me. Bladder 62 is found on the outside of your ankle, just below the big bump that you find on the outside of the ankle. You just roll your fingers down off of the large knuckle, bone sticking out, and just in the soft spot below that is called Bladder 62. This is on the yang heel linking channel, and it's connected to a point on your hand. This point is called Small Intestine 3. You make a fist, and you look on the pinky side of your fist, at the bottom, the base of the fist, you'll see a crease that's produced. And right at the tip of that crease is an acupuncture point called Small Intestine 3. And this is a paired point with the Bladder 62. And whenever you have problems in the legs or along the hands, these areas, you will stimulate if you have problems in the hands and arm, you'll stimulate the Small Intestine 3 on the side that the pain is, and you stimulate the Bladder 62 on the opposite side. If you have a problem in the leg, in the lower part, you stimulate the Bladder 62 on the side of the pain, and the stomach, or Small Intestine 3 on the opposite side. The other set of paired meridians within this are on the leg, just like on the outside of the ankle. You come to the inside of the ankle, just underneath the large bone there, and this is Kidney 3. And it controls pain on the inside of the leg as it comes up into the groin. And this is paired with an acupuncture point on your wrist called Lung 7 that you find by putting your hands together. And that's the way that you just kind of hook your thumbs with each other and then point your finger up your wrist towards your elbow. And right at the tip of your finger there's a little divot you can find, and this is Lung 7. Lung 7 is a master point on a number of occasions. It's an excellent point for neck spasms and anything in the head and neck region. But these two are paired points. You would stimulate the symptom side if it's on the inside of the arms, the Lung 7 on the symptom side, and Kidney 3 on the opposite side. And vice versa, if it's a pain or problem in the inside of the knee or the groin area, then you would stimulate Kidney 3 on the symptom side and Lung 7 on the opposite side. Other acupuncture points, some of my favorites are ones called Governing Vessel 20. Governing Vessel 20 is, I call it the apple stem. It's right on top of your head, right between the tips of your ears. So you come to the top tips of your ears and go up to the top of your head, and you'll find a real sensitive spot right in the top of your head. Now, this is a 100 meeting point. This is, think about the ley lines on the meridians on the globe, you know, the longitudinal lines. You take the longitudinal line of the globe and they all meet at the North Pole. This is the North Pole of the electrical grid of your body. And it's useful for headaches. It's my neutral point. When I have conditions in different parts of the body, I'll balance the chi from one side to the other, and then I'll use GV20 as a neutral point to where everything connects and coordinates. Now, very specifically, this point is a magic treatment point for hemorrhoids. So if you have bleeding, erupting, nasty hemorrhoids, ugly, you can go to the doctor and have them cut it out, or you can just poke on top of your head. Now, I know this from personal experiences, not as well as dozens of patients. It actually does work. I know it sounds silly. Why are you poking on your head when the pain's in the other end? But think of it as the planetary lines. You have the North Pole and the South Pole. You have one end is going to affect the other end. And like anything in acupuncture, the farther away from the problem you can stimulate a meridian system, the more powerful your stimulation is going to be. It's like playing crack the whip when you were a kid. Or if you're as old as I am, you can remember electric fences. And I grew up out in the country, and they had electric fences to keep the cows in. And we used to play these games where you would hold hands in a long chain, and then one person would grab the fence. And the person grabbing the fence wouldn't get shocked. The electricity would travel all the way down to the hands, and the last person on the line would be the one that would receive the jolt from the electrical fence. When you crack the whip, you're spinning around, and the person that starts the whip grabs hold of hands to the next guy and the next guy and the next guy, and eventually you get the chain long enough to where they can't hang on, and they get thrown across the pasture because of the inertial energy as it spreads out from the point of origin. The acupuncture works in similar ways. If you have a pain or problem in your hand, you can trace a meridian from the hand up into the face or into the chest, whereas the other ends of those meridians are going to be, and pick out an acupuncture point along the path where the pain is to stimulate distal or away from where the symptoms are coming from. And vice versa, if you have a toothache or a pain in the face, your chosen acupuncture points for most effect are going to be in your fingertips or your toe tips. The farther away from the position of pain, the better, because of the crack the whip kind of amplification as the energy moves through the acupuncture points and is accelerated or amplified. You get a much larger response the farther away from the symptom that you stimulate the body. So that's GV20 on the top. Let's throw some other points out there. Bladder 64 is on the cuticle on the outside of the little pinky toe. This is a powerful point for back pain, lumbalgia, herniated disc, these kind of things. But it also is used to turn a breech baby. So if you have a mother who's in her 8th month or 38th to 40th week, and the doctors are telling her she's still breech and they want to schedule a C-section, it's a good idea to visit a local acupuncturist or come see me, and we'll stimulate some acupuncture points and very likely straighten the energy out and help the baby turn and present itself properly and keep you from the surgery of the C-section. That's bladder 64. I'm gonna roll around. Another one that I like is large intestine 11. This is a immune system enhancing point. It increases the activity and number of white blood cells in your body. This is a very effective point, and it's used for virus infections, including AIDS. The way to find large intestine 11 is to bend your elbow, and you see the crease on the outside of your elbow. You roll your finger up into that crease and then come down in the arm just about a half of an inch, and you'll find a real tender spot right there. This is large intestine 11. It, like I said, it increases the white blood cell count and activity, and it's used for viral infections. Now, I use this point as a parent for a very special purpose. This is one of my discipline points. When a child is unruly and throwing a fit, usually when they're overly tired, you just simply control the wrist with one hand and run your hands up with the thumb on top of their arm with the other hand till you find the crease, and they come down off the crease and press, not hard at first, but slowly press a little bit more until the kid starts going, ah! Now, you get their attention with this point. They will stand still. They will start looking at you and start listening to you. You have to remember to not get emotional about this and not just crank on it because they deserve it. Stay the parent. Use this as a discipline point to get their attention so that you can communicate properly with them. And understand that when you use this point, not only are you getting their attention, you're stimulating their immune system and protecting them from colds and flus. Now, isn't that nice? So you can control your children and help them at the same time. Yeah, I've done this in public, you know, and you know, you can't. It's really difficult in our modern age because the state thinks it owns your children to discipline or communicate in a demanding way with your children in public. So these pressure points are very helpful to quietly without yelling, get their attention, get them to calm down, and get them to look you eye in the eye so you can communicate properly and get them under control until at least you can get out of there and get to a place where you can have more intimate conversations with the child. All right, so that's a number of acupuncture points that you can put in your drawer. I'm going to move on to a couple of news items that came across my desk this week. One of my really good news, a judge has banned the further production of genetically modified beets. Now, this is a story that I've been following for a number of years. Monsanto has created what we call Roundup Ready corn and Roundup Ready soybeans. Now, these have been in the food supply for several years now. But this year, they put out their first crop of Roundup Ready sugar beets. Now, we petitioned Hershey and other candy companies to not use these sugar beets that are soaked in Roundup. And at first, before they actually came onto the market, these companies were saying, yes, they're not interested in using these. They're going to use cane sugar. They're going to use other sources of sugar. But then when Monsanto actually got the beets in the ground and got them out, everything was off the table. And these companies said, you know, they're going to use whatever's cheap. They're going to use whatever they can get a hold of, which was these North Central Plains grown sugar beets. So I guess we were considering we'd lost that fight, you know, that here we go, another GMO that's in the system. It's just going to be, people are going to be eating this stuff and not even realize what they're eating. But to me, the ugly side of this is, you know, soaking corn in Roundup, so nothing else grows in there except the genetically modified corn, is bad. Soaking soybeans in Roundup, so that nothing else grows but the soybeans, is bad. But this part that you eat on corn and soybeans is above the ground. So though the plant's soaking up the Roundup, I don't like the sound of that anyway. At least the part you eat is not in the Roundup. Well, with sugar beets, it's a root plant. Now you're talking about the part you eat is soaking in Roundup. Now that just freaks me out. I mean, that's just disgusting sounding at the nature, and it just tells you how these corporations can pretty much do whatever they want around here because nobody is organized or in any way trying to protect the people at all. Everybody's out for their own pocketbook out there. We got a really real problem with that. But this judge stepped forward last week and put a halt to any further planting of the Roundup Ready. And what the article was saying is that what this judge, the case was underway, is that Monsanto did not do environmental impact studies on how the planting of these Roundup Ready beets was going to affect the local flora and fauna, the plants and the wildlife in and around the farms where they were planting all this stuff. So what he's done is put an injunction on the further use of Roundup Ready beets for now. And the story goes is that this may be several years for them to proceed through the proper research of environmental impact before they allow them to put these things back in the ground. So hopefully me, my friends, and you and anybody else interested in this can make the calls and make and educate people and get people involved in this and make sure that never happens again, that we do not let them put Roundup Ready GMO food into our sugar. I mean, eating sugar is bad enough. Eating Roundup sugar, yuck. Okay, we're going to take another break tonight, and we'll be back, and we're going to change the topic again. Everybody grab a cold one. Happy Friday. This is Dr. Drumright, Minutes to Memories. I'll see you in a minute. Oh,
105 FM.
Hey, this is Dr. Drumright. Happy Friday night. We're going to talk about some other topics here today. I wanted to hit on the Monsanto beast. I know that you probably have all heard of it many times, but it just as a chiropractor and a healthcare provider, it just irks me that a corporation can get away with some of this stuff. I heard a story the other day about Canadian farmers where Roundup Ready corn was they did not want to grow Roundup Ready corn. So they were growing their own corn, but the Roundup Ready was around them in the other farmers' fields, and the pollen from the Roundup Ready had cross-migrated into their fields. And somehow Monsanto was out there taking samples and doing genetic testing on this farmer's fields, and they found their patented DNA in this farmer's field who didn't pay the right taxes and licenses to have that in his field. So they took him to court, and the courts held that Monsanto held the patent on this material, and this farmer was breaching patent law, and they confiscated his entire crop legally with the assistance of some corrupt judge. I mean, just geez, I mean, how can they do that? It's a strange world we're living in today, a really strange world. Well, one other news item, the World Health Organization posted that they found that the flu advisors that they were using for the World Health posting of flu epidemics, by the way, the swine flu is over. I think it was last week when they declared that was over. as if we didn't know that, you know. But now the authorities have said it's over, so it must be over now. I don't know what they're going to do with all those vaccines they bought for $700 million, but hey, don't give them to me. I don't want them.
It was never here to begin with.
No, it was. You were right, Todd. It was just a money making grab. It was a payback for some act or another that we probably don't know what's going on. These corporations, they get the bills passed and the fear mongering, and they get their money. So the flu industry is making the rules and setting themselves up as the experts to tell you which ones you need and which ones you don't need. And of course, the ones you need are the ones they're selling. You know, it's like get the snake oil salesman in charge of the regulations. That's a smart idea. All right, let's change the topic a little bit. And this is our last segment. It's Friday night. I know I really wax into the philosophy a lot, and I do this in my office, and people tell me I probably shouldn't talk so much. So that's why I have a radio show, so I can come here and do all my talking so I don't chew people's ear off all day long. My exploration in the Native American culture, I know last week I was talking about the Niminha Band, and I have gone beyond the Niminha Band. I found through further research that the constitution of the Niminha Band is only one of over 500 existing constitutions, fully legitimate law systems within the continental United States. Now, these legal systems are backed by Supreme Court judgments. They're backed by the United Nations 2007 Indigent Cultures Act. They've got precedents on the global stage. They've got precedents within the United States Constitution. They've got precedents within the states that they operate in. Most of them are very new in their development. The root of many of these laws, legal systems, is the 1968 Indian Equal Rights Act. So there's a lot of connection to a resurgence of the natural or native culture, the sacred respect and honor between the generations. I'm reading letters from the generation from the 50s and 60s to the younger generation of Native Americans, pleading with them to take on the mantle of the elders and restore honor to the race, because in their drive to be like Americans, they've moved away from the culture and away from the honor that their elders have taught. And the alcoholism and the problems, that the gang problem, I guess, is what they talk about a lot now, is rampant in these communities. And they're not going to find salvation by looking to the current American legal system. Their salvation is to look back to the natural laws, to the legal systems of their ancestors, to which I am overwhelmed with the eloquence and the deep sincerity of these legal systems. So I am proposing, and I want to get some feedback from the listeners here, and because I really haven't heard anything back from you guys, so I don't know if anybody's out there or not. Hello, knock, knock, knock. Anybody home? I know you're out there, but Todd and I we're gonna move towards call-ins. We're gonna move towards website interfaces and these kind of things, because I want to see what kind of interest there is on actually establishing a band, an organized legal entity that will set up with honor a council to, by agreed upon measures, be the legal constructs for a group of human beings that share time and space in the current world. Now, that was a mouthful, but basically write a constitution and then present this with honor and respect to anybody who's interested in participating, and then through contractual arrangements, if you're interested in participating, you sign on to the Constitution and become a part of the General Council and bring family and friends on board, and we literally grow a new country within a country. I really believe that resistance or violence begets more violence, that taking on something bigger than you just get yourself crushed. It's a much clearer, purer path to simply find a new way. Stop paying attention to the bad way and start putting your heart and attention onto a new way and create something new, and then protect that something new as it grows to replace the bad old way. Without conflict, without any kind of taking it on or revolution or any kind of violence whatsoever, I believe that we can take the American way. And, you know, think about it. Since our founders, 1776, the Declaration of Independence to now, we've now respect women on an equal footing. We now have our colorblind in our, we should be colorblind. And we need to promote that within any current new constructs or a new system that we create. It has to be a completely colorblind. And, you know, speaking of colorblind, I mean, one of the fascinating things about the Facebook community is a Facebook community is a colorblind community. Your words are put upon the internet for others to read, regardless of how old you are or what sex you are or what race you are or whatever the background. If you're speaking from the heart and you're speaking from the knowledge that you have, you will be challenged. There will be counterpoints, but if you have the courage to stand in the face of that and actually admit when you're mistaken and learn from the others that are out there, you're actually seeing a community, a gathering of elders on Facebook that by its very nature, since your interaction there, you don't even have a body. It's just your thoughts that are being communicated out into the ether world and bantered around and reposted and spread around. And circling all around here without any reference to what body you're actually living in or even what part of the planet you're eating on. Very, very interesting world we live in today. So I want to pull something forward from the ancestors and from the elders of the Native American. This is called the Lodge of the People. The Lodge of the People is much more than just a shelter from the elements. For it, as do most terms in our culture, has symbolic significance and lessons to teach us and the generations to come. There are 15 poles in the average lodge, and each one has symbolic meanings attached to them. Each one carries a lesson. And I'm going to read this to my scout troop tomorrow night. My Cub Scout is now a Bear Scout, so we're getting into some heavier stuff. Pole number one, obedience. Obedience is following the traditions and teachings that were passed to us by our ancestors and the elders of today. This isn't obedience to a person who's standing in front of you, because each person is self-determined. You have to live within your own honor. It's an obedience to a path that has been set before you of how to live in honor. Happiness. Happy heart, mind, and soul to share our homes with others. Our home literally becomes theirs. So in the community that we talked about at first with the Tao Te Ching, the Native Americans talk about out of the kindness of your heart, you all of your harvest and all of your home is to be shared with anyone in need, anyone that you come in contact with. And through the gracious sharing, understanding that in honor, these other people will share with you as well. So you create a voluntary community, not a forced socialism community, but literally a voluntary community where everybody naturally and with an open heart pitches in as best they can to live in honor within the community. Respect. Respect for all living life forms, the two-leggeds, the finned ones, the creepy crawlers, the solid ones, or standing ones, to allow each being to be as they are without judgment or ridicule, to their face or behind their back, respecting them for who they are, where they are, at the level of growth and development that they are. Now, this is a really, this respect thing sinks in. I mean, when you're around a lot of children, you see, because I coach soccer and scouts and stuff like that, you see children that are at different developmental levels. And so you intend to move on to the advanced ones and maybe ignore the less developed ones, or some people pay more attention to the less developed ones because they're more needy, and it makes you feel better to work with the needy and you ignore the more self-determined ones. And what this is saying is that you got to respect all God's creatures for what they are, to not judge them or override your opinion on them, but literally stand back and let them be what they are and then appreciate and respect them for just that. Humility, knowing we are no less and certainly no more than another, knowing that we are only a small part of the total whole, one strand in the massive web of life. Know that all life was created by a higher power, and knowing that we too make errors on our life walk. Acceptance. Accepting all life as our relations, knowing that we are truly connected to all life forms and to all two-leggeds as well. That's what they call humans, because we're one of the only animals that walks on two legs. Strength. Showing patience in times of stress, not complaining but learning to endure, knowing we will eventually understand that the overall picture, strength of character, of men of soul, of spirit, and then strength of resolve and body. This is exemplary demonstration of this is the my new friends at Manitaka. I would recommend and encourage everyone to visit a website called manitaka.org. It's manitaka.org. It is an organization in central Arkansas, and you'll just read the website. We'll probably talk about it more later. Very interesting history. It's an ancient sacred site where natives are gathering from all over North, South, and Central America at this place in Arkansas. And they're talking about endurance and how the Native American has endured the last 400 years, the oppression of the Judeo-Christian European filth that came across and murdered and killed and stole and did everything to them. But even in the face of all that, their recommendations are not for revenge, not for equality, not for trying to get back or get evens or you owe me. So, see, I think that's a big problem with a lot of people is they live life thinking that they're owed. And the Native Americans at Manitaka are teaching that, no, you are you. You have one chance to live in honor. And to live in honor is to love life wholly, completely, without fear, so that now, in this mortal form, you will have the opportunity to evolve. And I believe that we're living in a place now where humanity is on the cusp of an evolution, as we spoke of at the very beginning. The ancient Chinese spoke of it. The ancient Americans spoke of it. At the age of Aquarius, you know, as Todd said, and I don't know if you knew this, Todd. You know what? When the age of Aquarius started, the solar the ages or the march of the equinox, and maybe we'll talk about that. And I'm sure some of your other guests have talked about that. It's the equinox sunrise moved from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius on February 6th, 1962. Now, Todd, when were you born? 1968. I was born in November of 1962. So we are the children of Aquarius. We are the first of a 2,400-year cycle. We are some of the first-born humans into this new age of Aquarius, this new age of enlightenment. And so now in 2012 and where we're at now, 40 years into the age of Aquarius, you're seeing the first and the second full generation of Aquarians actually take their positions of authority within the mantles of human legal systems and constructs. So you're seeing my generation, people that are just in their 40s and late 30s and early 40s now, as they assume the mantle of authority, you're going to see a completely different mindset of what to do with that power. Okay? So it's Friday. You guys have an awesome weekend. This is Dr. Drumright. HarmonyHealth.com is my website. I'm in North Kansas City up by the airport. So if you're ever flying by here, or if you live in the Kansas City, I'd love to see you. We do acupuncture, chiropractic, massage therapy, nutritional counseling, even depression counseling. And we talk about death sequences and anything that you need to talk about. I have a good open heart and an open ear. I want to hear you talk. You tell your story, and maybe from my history and what I've been through, I can give you some insight on how to rebalance and regain harmony in your life. And Minutes to Memories, thank you for your time and attention. I love you all. Dr. Drumright, signing out.